True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch, reaching deep left field. This is way back. Welcome on.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
I think it's official. Christian Yelich is hot. Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Thursday, May 12th. Frank Stanfield joined by Chris Towers, and we've got a whole bunch on the show today. By high candidates, rankings movers, Jose Berríos might just stink the season, and much more. But let's jump right in.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, Chris. Oh my goodness gracious. I'll let you do it. For the brand.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you're up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Christian Yelich. Turns out he's pretty good, probably. He hit for the cycle today for the third time in his career. He's the fifth player in Major League history to hit for the cycle.
Sixth
player in Major League history to hit for the cycle three times. First player, second player to do it three times against one team. Okay, I think it was the second.
When I saw that, that was wild. Three times against the Cincinnati Reds.
Also, all three times that he's hit for the cycle, he needed a triple in his last plate appearance, I believe, and got it. Or got the triple last, at least. So
that's awesome.
If Christian Yelich gets a double, a single, and a home run, he's gonna hustle to get that triple. There have been positive signs for Christian Yelich, you know, for much of the season. The numbers haven't always looked quite all that good, but the average exit velocity, hard hit rates, all that stuff has mostly been pretty good. And right now, his average exit velocity sits at 89th percentile, 92.3 miles per hour. That is the fourth best mark of his career, which, you know, I guess fourth best in the Statcast era. That's only eight seasons, but Christian Yelich has run up some pretty impressive average exit velocities in his career. So 92.3 would be most players' career high. He's got a 56.3% hard hit rate. That's 98th percentile, 95th percentile on max exit velocity. Has the second highest average launch angle of his career at 8.9 degrees. Strikeout rate down to 22.8%. It's pretty much all looking like Christian Yelich is very, very good. I don't want to say he's going to be the MVP-level version of Christian Yelich because, one, you can't expect anyone to be a 330 hitter with 50 home runs and a 30 stolen base pace. That's a little unrealistic, but he's looking really good right now. He's looking like one of the better outfielders in baseball. I've got him in my top 20 at outfield now. I'm not sure, Frank, if you've got him in that same range, and frankly, I'm not sure if I should have him higher at this point, because the guys ahead of him, JD Martinez, Chris Bryant, Whit Merrifield, it wouldn't take much to surpass those guys, although it was nice to see Whit Merrifield have a good game. Feeling pretty good about all of my Christian Yelich shares right now.
As you should. And yes, I have him inside of my top 20 outfielders as well. He's at 20 exactly. Scott went ahead and moved him all the way up to 15. And
you can always count on Scott to be like skeptical about someone, and then just like once he decides he's in, he's all the way in. There's no half measures. I love that.
I know towards the end of draft season, Scott jumped on board with Christian Yelich. He kind of flipped from Bellinger to Yelich, and he was in. I know he drafted a few shares. So, yeah, he's got him up at 15. And like you said, I think that you can kind of make that argument that Yelich should be ahead of Reynolds and Ketel Marte and JD Martinez. So, you know, a couple more games like this, then I could see making that move as well. Scott has already gone ahead and made that move. I agree with you, Chris. I think that he is, so far this season, he's looked much better than he has in years past. Please, please just stay healthy, Christian Yelich. Mm-hmm. But you shouldn't expect MVP numbers. If we can get an 850 OPS, 850 plus OPS out of Yelich,
I mean, look, an 850 OPS might be like the 15th highest OPS in baseball this season based on what we've seen so far. Now, right now he's on roughly a 30 homer, 15 stolen base pace. And I think that's
awesome.
Is pretty reasonable, and I think he's probably going to hit 270 plus. And I think you should be really happy about Christian Yelich right now.
All right, I was going to save this for a little bit later on, Chris, but buy high or no thanks, guy. What do you think? If you can, it's probably going to take a lot now after the cycle game, obviously, but would you be looking to buy high on Christian Yelich right now?
Yeah, look, it depends. Like, if someone's viewing Christian Yelich as a top 12 outfielder, if someone is, you know, like, I still have Teoscar Hernandez a decent amount ahead of Christian Yelich. So if someone's asking for a similar return to what they would want for Teoscar or Starling Marte or something like that, I would probably be pumping the brakes. But I feel like there are probably still a decent amount of people who are like, well, Yelich still has that back injury. And even if he's healthy right now, you never know. Like, sure, that might be the case, but it's also the case that he has talked about having played through this back injury for a while, and so I don't necessarily know if it's something that we should be concerned about. Like, yeah, he has to stay healthy, but I don't know if he's that much more of an injury risk than, I mean, Chris Bryant's currently on the IL. JD Martinez is 34. I think Christian Yelich, I'm buying high right now.
You know what I think is a fun trade right now, Chris? I don't know if the Yelich manager would take this, or obviously they would need pitching, but swapping Pablo Lopez for Christian Yelich. It just seems like it kind of makes sense on both sides. There's injury risk, but you know, while they're healthy this season, they both have looked really good. So again, I think most trades right now are probably going to be pitcher for hitter if you can pull that off. So maybe like a Pablo Lopez, or I don't know, would you give up Dylan Cease for Yelich right now the way that he's pitched?
Oh man, that's a tough one. Let me check. I did do the trade values chart today, and I would think that I have Yelich just a little bit. They're basically the same range. So right. Yeah, so I think that makes sense. I've got Yelich. I think he's 14, and Cease is 13 in the chart, something like that. So I think that makes sense.
All right, Chris is staying on brand for his. Oh my goodness gracious, player. You know I am too.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money
talks. Here comes the money.
Nice little pitcher's duel out on the West Coast. Shane McClanahan going up against Shohei Ohtani. Shane O'Mac was amazing. I will point out that there was no Mike Trout or Taylor Ward in the lineup, but nonetheless, 7 shutout innings for McClanahan, 3 hits, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts. He had 24 swinging strikes on 100 pitches, and the way that he distributes these swinging strikes, it is just awesome. 10 on the fastball, 6 on the changeup, 4 on the curve, 4 on the slider. He has 4 legitimate pitches. This was his second 7-inning start of the season. The ERA down to 2.52. All the numbers just look like McClanahan is a legitimate SP1. So I think as long as he's working this deep into games and they're not really holding him back like the Rays like to do at times, I think that we might have an SP1 on our hands here, Chris. I'm not ranking him that way. I moved him up to SP20 in the rankings. He's just behind Robbie Ray, Freddie Peralta. I kind of feel like that's the range he should be in right now. But a couple of more starts like this, I think Shane McClanahan's knocking on like the top 12.
Yeah, I mean, he's SP26 for me, but that's me giving a lot of benefit of the doubt to Charlie Morton still. And you know, I think like the Dylan Cease, Clayton Kershaw, Pablo Lopez range makes sense, but he might be better than all of them. You know, the ERA is, I mean, 306, we usually think that's borderline ace material. This season, it's like pretty good. which, you know, tells you a lot about where we're at. And he still gives up some hard contact, but look, if he's going to be a 30-plus percent strikeout rate guy, and, you know, the stuff is certainly there for him to do it, then I don't think it really matters how hard he's going to get hit. You know, that's kind of that Robbie Ray, Shane Bieber territory where, like, yeah, you can struggle with giving up hard contact, but when you're striking out a third of the opposing hitters, it doesn't really matter all that much. And so, yeah, McClanahan absolutely has ace potential, and he's showing it right now.
And you know what also helps, Chris, when you're allowing hard contact, but a lot of that contact is on the ground. 61% ground ball rate for Shane McClanahan. Again, it's everything is lining up. The strikeouts, the swinging strike rate. Mm-hmm. He only has 10 walks over his first 39 and a third innings pitched this season. And then, of course, the ground balls, which I just mentioned. So I would not be looking to sell high. I know some people might have that question. He just looks like a legitimate ace. And, you know, the ranking is kind of weird, Chris. It's rankings in general are kind of weird because I have Shane Bieber ranked ahead of McClanahan. Mm-hmm. But if someone offered me Bieber for my McClanahan right now, there's no way that I'm taking that trade just personally.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's the thing with rankings is, like, we can say, well, this player is ranked X and this player is ranked Y. And even the trade values chart, like, this player is worth it. But, like, there's still a psychological factor to it. And there's still, like, I don't feel like you would need to give up Shane McClanahan to get Shane Bieber right now. You know, like that it just, it might, like, the way I rank it, I think that would work out for you. But I don't think you should necessarily do that because I think you can do a better trade than that, given what we've seen from those two right now. You know, there's also the marketplace aspect of making trades where it's not just what you think this player is worth. It's also what you think other people think they're worth, you know?
Yeah, for sure. On the other side, Shohei Ohtani looked great once again. 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 5 strikeouts to 2 walks. He's got 46 strikeouts to 7 walks on the season, over 32 and a third innings pitched. 2.78 ERA. The xFIP for Ohtani is 2.00. So he has been tremendous as well. Ultimately, both guys wind up with a no decision in this start. Bonus, oh my goodness gracious. You wanted Whit Merrifield, you got him. Easily his best game of the season. He went 3-for-4 with a sock and a shoe. His first home run, his fourth stolen base. He doubled his season-long run total in one game. He had 4 runs scored entering this start, and he added 4 runs in this game. So
I'm going to guess this is one of the last times we see him bat eighth.
That would make sense. I mean, overall, the Royals lineup in general has just been dreadful, so...
Yeah.
Stream your pitchers against them right now. But again, we're preaching patience with a lot of hitters right now. And I know a lot of fantasy managers don't want to hear that. But look, these guys are proven. And just like we said yesterday, you know, your window to buy Whit Merrifield probably just closed. One more bonus, oh my goodness gracious, of the bad variety. I mean,
yeah.
Tyler McGill saw Corey Kluber yesterday and he's like, well, hold my beer. ERA goes from 2.43 to 4.41 in one start. He recorded just 4 outs at the Nationals. He gave up 8 hits, 8 earned runs, 2 home runs allowed. That is a 54.00 ERA in this start. Negative 18.5 fantasy points over on CBS. Could not locate his fastball. Didn't have the slider. I think he was unlucky, too. I know he gave up 2 home runs, so it's hard to say he was unlucky, but... he had a 667 BABIP on 3 hard hit balls. If anyone in your league is trying to spite drop Tyler McGill or just spite trade him because they're so frustrated with this, obviously, Chris, I would still be looking to buy him.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, the velocity has not returned quite to where it was last season, but it's not. He's not averaging 96, 97 with the fastball like he was early in the season. And, I mean, I guess it's still early in the season, but, you know, early for early. His strikeout rate is down to 27.7%. It was 26% last season. So I don't know. There are reasons to think that maybe we overreacted with Tyler McGill early on. And he's a player who I've had some trouble ranking because I've kept him in like the 40 to 50 range and it feels low. But after this start, like I've got him just behind Eric Lauer. and just behind Mike Clevenger and Zach Allen and Jesus Luzardo, who didn't have a great start in his most recent one as well. And I kind of feel like that makes sense. And so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is a buy low opportunity if someone is really worried about him. But, you know, if someone still views Tyler McGill as like a top 35 starting pitcher, maybe there's room to buy. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I have him ranked in that same range, SP 42 for me. And it's in a similar range as breakout hopefuls who have kind of had some hiccups recently. Jesus Luzardo, Kyle Wright is in that range for me.
Yep.
Joe Ryan is right there just behind Tyler McGill. So that is the right range. I move Eric Lauer ahead of all those. I have him at SP 37. He was one of my biggest risers in my most recent update because he really hasn't had that kind of blow up start or any kind of hiccup. He's just looked ridiculous. So,
and I'm moving Alex Cobb ahead of him now too.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Alex Cobb, solid once again. We'll talk about him a little bit later on. Let's get back to buy high or no thanks guy. A few other candidates here. Gleyber Torres went 2-for-4 with his fifth home run of the season. It was another kind of Yankee Stadium special, so I'll point that out. He had 5 RBI in this game. He accounted for all the Yankees' runs, actually. And overall, the numbers don't look great right now, but over the last 15 games, Gleyber Torres batting .260 with 4 home runs. And Chris, you know, you look at the underlying numbers here. The fly ball rate is up to 48% this year. Average exit velocity for Gleyber Torres, 92.6 miles per hour. By far a career best. This isn't somebody who's ever really hit the ball all that hard, even in his breakout season back in 2019. And speaking of that breakout season, what I noticed is he was really aggressive that year. His swing rate, he was chasing more pitches, and he's gotten back to doing that this year. The past couple of years, I thought he was too passive at times and maybe just being too patient at the plate, but he's being more aggressive and it's working out for him. Gleyber actually might be available in some leagues, some shallow leagues. He's 73% rostered, but in some deeper ones, I'm looking to buy. I really like what I see under the hood here.
Yeah, and the nice thing is, you know, his swing rate is up to 52.8%. That's a career high. His career high prior was 51.8% in 2019. So, you know, anytime you're pointing back towards that range or that time period, I think you view that as a positive, or at least not a negative. And the other thing is, despite the fact that he's swinging more than ever, his whiff rate is down. So he's making more contact, and typically what you'll see when a player is being more aggressive and making more contact is they're sacrificing quality of contact, and that's not what we're seeing from Gleyber Torres. Like you said, exit velocity higher than it's ever been, 92.6 miles per hour. Hard hit rate, 50.7%. That's an 89th percentile mark. That's really, really good. And so, yeah, I based on what we're seeing from Gleyber Torres, that there are definitely reasons to be optimistic about him. I didn't expect to be optimistic about him when I was looking at it, but I think this is all good signs for Gleyber Torres. It doesn't mean that he's back to, you know, being a 38 homer guy. I don't think it was ever realistic to expect him to be a 38 homer guy again, but I like what we're seeing for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think he needs to be, Chris. If in this environment, if he hits .260 to .270 with 25 home runs as a middle infielder, that's awesome right now. So, yeah, I think we're both in there. Buy high on Gleyber Torres.
Chris, and hopefully playing better will make him an everyday player because he hasn't been so far. He's sitting like every
fourth or fifth
game. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully if he continues to hit the ball well, he'll be in the lineup.
I'll point out in general, Aaron Boone has done that with all the Yankees hitters this season. Josh Donaldson, I think he's doing it as a way to keep them healthy. I mean, he's even done it with Judge. Judge, as great as he's been, he's sat out a few games, but Stanton, Josh Donaldson, these guys are all getting regular days off, and I think it's just part of their plan as like a team philosophy.
Given the guys that they have, it probably makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to throw two catchers your way here, Chris. Wilson Contreras, he went 2-for-4 with his fourth home run on Wednesday. He's batting .304. He's low-key been awesome. He's got a .935 OPS. His strikeout rate is down this year. His average exit velocity way up as well, 93.1 miles per hour. I noticed he's crushing it whenever he DHs this season, too. He's batting .474 with 2 homers as a DH. And coming into the season, it's something I also noticed that he liked doing, batting as a DH, and of course Wilson Contreras in a contract year. The other one is Tyler Stevenson. He went 3-for-5 with 2 doubles, 4 more RBI. He's batting .322 with a .956 OPS himself. Chris, what do you think about buying high on Wilson Contreras or Tyler Stevenson? There's got to be teams out there that need a catcher. I know that.
I mean, all but like whoever has Travis d'Arnaud is probably feeling pretty good about catcher. Other than that, you know, there's probably not a lot.
Hey, Dalton Varsho, he's been awesome.
I wrote a tweet today, you know, saying, well, maybe I was wrong about Tyler Stevenson. And then I was like, well, let me do some research before I take an L publicly. And I looked at Tyler Stevenson's underlying data, and it stinks. It's really bad. His average exit velocity, 85.4 miles per hour. His hard hit rate, 32.5%. His, you know, obviously we know the expected stats aren't quite as useful right now because they haven't been calibrated to this new offensive environment. However, his expected WOBA is 305 compared to a 396 WOBA. The reason that expected stats this year wouldn't really be all that useful relative to the past would be that they're overstating offensive production. So I'm not at all ready to take an L on Tyler Stevenson. I know he's got a 956 OPS. I know he's got 3 home runs. And his barrel rate is higher than it has been in the past, although still, you know, not great. But I'm not too concerned about being wrong about Tyler Stevenson yet.
So
that's what I will say.
Does that also mean that you are looking...
Sell high. No thanks, guy, comma, I will sell high.
All right, well, I hope you have a good backup plan at catcher because if you sell Tyler Stevenson...
Oh, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, you could pick up someone... Alejandro Kirk is coming around.
Yeah, he had a couple hard hit balls today. I like what we're seeing from him. But Wilson Contreras, I don't know if I would say buy high just because he's... Because the landscape is so bad and because he carries a lot of name value, I don't necessarily know that you're going to pay full freight. For Wilson Contreras, and I don't think he's going to continue to be a 400 expected WOBA player. You know, throughout his career, he's pretty steadily been in the 340 to 350 range, and I think that's probably what he'll be moving forward. Just like with Whit Merrifield and Ketel Marte, where, you know, we talked yesterday about betting on their track record. Wilson Contreras is another guy. I think you can bet on his track record, and he's probably just hot right now. That being said, that track record is one of the best hitting catchers in baseball, and he's playing pretty much every day. I think he's started 25 of 30 games for the Cubs so far. So like there are actually a handful of catchers who are playing a ton right now, which is a good sign. Dalton Varsho chief among them, but Vladimir Guerrero, JT Realmuto has also played a bunch of games. So, you know, if Realmuto and Salvador Perez could start hitting, that would be great. But yeah, I think Wilson Contreras, like, I didn't really move him up in my rankings this time, but I feel very solid about him. I just don't think he's going to keep this up.
Fair enough. All right, so we are looking to sell high on Tyler Stevenson. Don't buy Wilson Contreras because it's probably going to take too much. I have one buy low candidate here, Chris. Kyle Schwarber went 0-for-4 with 3 more strikeouts on Wednesday. He's now 0-for-13 with 7 strikeouts in this series against the Seattle Mariners. He's batting .185. The strikeout rate is up to 31.7%. There's some weird things going on right now. The average exit velocity is down, the barrel rate, the hard hit rate, basically the same. But you look at the batted ball distribution. I know this is something you spoke about recently, Chris, where line drive rate is kind of hard to trust this early in the season. He has a 7% line drive rate. League average is probably like 18, 20%, something like that. 7%, that's very bad. His fly balls are way up. His infield fly balls are way up. Chris, what do you think about buying low on Kyle Schwarber?
I think you probably should. Yeah, just because, again, it's like we talked about with Whit Merrifield, where the track record is long enough of him being a very solid player, and you know, the last couple of seasons, especially, Kyle Schwarber has been a really, really high-end power option. So I think you should probably buy low, because, yeah, Line drive rate is way down, and that's the primary culprit for his struggles right now. That, and he's hitting a ton of pop-ups. His pop-up rate is 16.2%. He's had about 50% more pop-ups than line drives so far. That's really bad. Pop-ups almost always turn into outs. Line drives almost always turn into hits. So you generally want those two things to be moving in the opposite direction. But it's still early. He's not 34 to where you would think, oh, he's just cratered. So I think this is probably just a rough stretch for Kyle Schwarber.
Okay, and I'll point out, through May 31st last season, Kyle Schwarber was batting .230 with a .766 OPS. Mm-hmm. Strikeout rate was 29%, so that was actually lower. But if you remember,
right in the same range.
If you remember what happened after that, is that he hit 16 home runs and batted .280 in the month of June. So he's one of those guys that could just get hot, Chris.
Like we talked about with Brandon Lau yesterday.
Yeah.
You know Kyle Schwarber's streaky. Yeah. His career has been defined by hot streaks and cold streaks, and that's true of every player to a certain degree. But Kyle Schwarber, his tend to be pretty pronounced. And so I don't think you can sell. I don't think there's any reason to sell a guy on a cold streak. You know, I mentioned with Jazz Chisholm the other day, where I want to see what he looks like after a cold streak. You know, I want to see what happens when pitchers have made adjustments to him and he's made adjustments to pitchers and where he settles. And Kyle Schwarber has a much longer track record, so it's even less of a concern to me. But yeah, you're selling him at what is likely to be his lowest point. So I just don't think it makes any sense. I would absolutely try to buy low.
All right. Some recent trade questions that we received. This was an email from Gonzalo. Grade the trade 8x8 head-to-head categories with hits, walks, OPS as the added ones for hitting, and walks, strikeouts, K per nine, quality starts added for pitchers. I dealt Zach Gallen for Brandon Lau. Grade the trade.
I think that's probably an A. As much as I like Gallen, pitching's really easy to find right now, and guys who can potentially hit 40 home runs are not. Brandon Lau hit 39 last year. And he hit 39 last year despite being just about as bad to this point in the season as he has been so far. So another guy that you know can get hot, and you know he can put together the kind of stretches that'll really change his outlook. So I'm perfectly fine. Are you highlighting those names because you don't know who they are?
No, I just wanted to make sure. I knew I had a good idea who they were, but I had to make sure. This next one is an email from Peyton. Dear Brian, Nick, Kevin, AJ, and Howie.
Tell me why.
There you go, the Backstreet Boys. All right, grade the trade in a 12-team head-to-head points league. I gave Jose Altuve, Connor Joe, and Miles Michaelis, receiving Ozzie Albies, Teoscar Hernandez, and Sean Manaea.
Yeah, I don't know what the person who accepted this trade was thinking, because I think you got the better version of every type of player here. Ozzie Albies is better than Jose Altuve. Teoscar Hernandez, I like Connor Joe, but Teoscar Hernandez is better than Connor Joe. And Shaman is better than Miles Michaelis, so I think that's great. There's a bit of a sell high, buy low aspect to this trade in moving Connor Joe and Miles Michaelis for Teoscar Hernandez and Shaman. And if that's all the trade was, I think that'd be great. The fact that you were able to get Ozzie Albies for Jose Altuve on top of that, I think just puts it over the top. I think it's an A.
All right. And I received a tweet on Wednesday asking if we should sell high on Tommy Edman. And I hadn't really thought about it. I just know that he's been crushing it. Tommy Edman batting .290, three homers, 18 runs scored, 14 RBI, seven steals. A true five-category contributor, which I was not expecting in the least. So, look, between Dalton Varsho, Tommy Edman, those are probably been my biggest L's so far this season. I noticed the walk rate way up for Tommy Edman this year. Oddly enough, he's hitting more ground balls and more infield fly balls, and the quality of contact is up slightly. What do you think, Chris? Would you look to sell high on Tommy Edman right now?
Yeah, I mean, if someone's going to look at Tommy Edman and say, wow, this is a potential 15 to 20 homer, 35 plus stolen base guy, and with really good run and RBI numbers, then yeah, I would be willing to sell him. But I don't know. He's not that much different than he was last season, at least in terms of the projected, the pace for the counting stats. And I was skeptical that he was going to repeat the 30 stolen bases, especially, and that was where a lot of his value seemed to be laying, but he's on pace for it, and they're letting him run again, and he's really fast. There's definitely some good luck involved in what he's doing so far. I don't think he's a 290 hitter, but I don't know. He's probably like a 270 hitter, and you know, I don't. If you set the over under at 9.5 home runs from here on out, I think that'd be a tough one. I think I might take the under, but the stolen bases look sustainable, and that's going to be the hardest thing to replace, especially if he's not a zero anywhere else. I mean, we're talking about a world in which Adalberto Mondesi is already done for the season, so one of the premier stolen base guys is off the board. There's not a lot of guys who are going to give you what Tommy Edman can. So yeah, like based on what he's doing right now, I would take the under on his current OPS. I would take an under on 818 OPS moving forward, but I would have trouble, like in the league that I'm in, I would have trouble moving him because I do think the stolen bases are legitimate.
It's so hard because he's one of the only players that's contributing offensively right now. Like,
also that.
I think the idea of selling high on Tommy Edman is the correct one for all the reasons that you laid out. It's just, it's so hard to give up a player this valuable right now. So would you flip him for Teoscar Hernandez if you could?
Sure, yes. I have Teoscar Hernandez ranked quite a bit ahead of him.
How about Whit Merrifield? This is an interesting one because they seem so similar. When everything is going right for both, they're kind of similar players. I don't think it makes sense.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, they both might just be 270 hitters with single to low double-digit home run totals and 30-plus steals, and probably two of the better bets for 30-plus steals. So that's a really tough one. I have Whit Merrifield ranked quite a bit higher right now, but maybe I'm just deferring too much to Whit Merrifield's experience in that regard.
Maybe I am overreacting to this, but I have moved Tommy Edman ahead of Whit Merrifield at both second base and outfield. I've got him 19th at the outfield position just because there's so many outfielders that are not producing. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just overreacting too much, but he's been awesome so far.
That's one that my knee-jerk reaction didn't quite hold up to a second thought.
All right. We'll see what happens. Tommy Edman, before we hit the break, make sure to sign up for our Fantasy Baseball Today newsletter if you haven't already. Dan Schneier, he does a great job for it, and it's free. So why wouldn't you sign up? CBSSports.com/newsletters. And of course, you can sign up for our Fantasy Football Today newsletter, which Chris does. So if you want to support Chris and support our buddy Dan, again, FBT and FFT newsletters, they are free. CBSSports.com/newsletters. Let's take a quick break. And when we return, news and notes here on Fantasy Baseball Today. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The news and notes. Ronald Acuna was held out of the lineup Wednesday due to a sore groin. The Braves don't sound too worried as they expect Acuna to return on Friday. Please, we don't need this right now. Ronald Acuna just returned, and he's stolen 5 bases in 10 games. Yeah. He's been amazing. So, I mean, I get it.
Although, you know, your team only has 3 of them, I guess, in all likelihood, because 2 of them came in that first game back.
Yes, that's fair.
But still, you love to see how he's playing so far, and you would hate to see it slow down.
Look, I guess take all the time you need to get right. Don't rush him back into the lineup, but we need him. We need Ronald Acuna. Zach Wheeler is scheduled to return from the COVID IL and start Thursday against the Dodgers. Chris, would you start him in daily lineup leagues?
Yeah, I would. I guess there's always the chance that he's dealing with some... I don't know. He's winded, I guess, as a result of it. But I would say you probably have to start him.
Speaking of COVID, the White Sox and Guardians game was postponed Wednesday due to multiple positive COVID tests within the Cleveland organization. I believe Terry Francona was one of them, so I hope everything is all right there with the Guardians. Joey Votto will likely require a rehab assignment before rejoining the Reds. He has been on the COVID IL since May 3rd. Taylor Ward has not started 3 straight games with a hamstring injury, but said he will, quote, absolutely be back in the lineup on Friday. And in fact, he actually pinch hit on Wednesday late in the game, and he hit a game-tying home run off of Andrew Kittredge in the 8th inning of that game. So if you bench Taylor Ward in a daily lineup league because he didn't start, I am sorry, because he is just on fire right now. He's been awesome. Ryan Mountcastle was held out of the lineup Wednesday due to left wrist soreness. Garrett Whitlock will make another start for the Red Sox on Monday against the Houston Astros. Steven Strasburg is scheduled to throw another simulated game at extended spring training this weekend. The Nationals will reassess after that. Evan Longoria was reinstated and batting 3rd in the lineup. He went 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. Manny Margot has missed the past 2 games with that hamstring injury, but expects to return on Friday. Nico Hoerner was diagnosed with a right ankle sprain after x-rays came back negative. The Cubs say Hoerner may require a couple days off, but isn't expected to require a trip to the injured list. Brendan Rodgers, the guy was hot. Scott puts him on the sleeper list, and now he's dealing with a hand injury. He hasn't played the past 2 days and is expected to return Friday against the Royals. Randall Grichuk has not played the past 2 days, dealing with a stomach bug. Jake McGee placed on the IL with lower back tightness. Lower back tightness. I think he's just been terrible. They're trying to, like, I don't know, get his mind right now, but he hasn't been good. He's got a 9.58 ERA. And in case you needed any more confirmation, Camilo Doval is the closer for the Giants for the time being. The Twins pitcher, Bailey Ober, threw a 20-pitch bullpen session on Wednesday. He is on the IL with a groin issue. Rich Hill will return from the COVID IL and start Saturday at the Rangers. And Joey Wendell, who has surprisingly been really good, left Wednesday's game with right hamstring tightness. Let's talk about some rankings movers. Chris's latest trade chart is out on the site. And if you ever want to just see our rankings, follow along, they are updated and you can find them cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball/rankings. The biggest risers for Chris: Carlos Rodon, Christian Yelich, Jazz Chisholm, and Julio Rodriguez. Chris, I know we were talking beforehand and you're buying high on Julio Rodriguez right now.
Yeah, that's what I wrote about with the trade chart, and you know, he kind of looks like another one of the high-end rookies who's struggling. He entered today 255, 317, 345 triple slash line with a 33% strikeout rate. But I don't know, like, one, the fact that he's got 10 stolen bases and he's 99th percentile in sprint speed, like, the fact that he's got 10 steals despite not hitting the ball all that well so far, I feel like is a really good sign. The fact that they've just given him a green light, and I haven't seen any reason to think that there's like anything weird or fluky with it. I know sometimes I think Ramon Laureano last year had like 7 steals in the first 2 weeks of the season, but like 4 of them were effectively defensive indifference. Like the there was no throw on them. And so I haven't seen any reason to think that that's the case with Julio Rodriguez. But the reason I'm buying is culminating on April 24th, he had struck out 22 of his first 48 plate appearances. That's a 46% strikeout rate. That was a 4 strikeout game on April 21st. Since then, he's down to 24%. And I think that might be sustainable. There's some swing and miss in his game. He's a big dude, and he's young, and he's aggressive. But 8 of those first 22 strikeouts, we talked about this a handful of times early on in the season, but 8 of those first 22 strikeouts were on called strikes that were outside of the strike zone. Julio Rodriguez just, I think there was some bad luck involved, and he also had the third lowest swing rate on 2 strike counts, which he's raised since then. But he's been a little more aggressive overall, but the biggest thing is that his contact rate has jumped from 65% in that first 12 games to 75% in 18 games since then. And that's basically going from worst in baseball last year to middle of the pack. And given how well he's hitting the ball, I think that's a really good thing. He doesn't have to be an elite contact guy. He just has to be good enough with how well he hits the ball. And even then, he doesn't have to hit the ball that well if he's going to steal 40 bases. I don't know if he's going to steal 40 bases, but he's on about a 50 steal pace right now. So, yeah, I'm buying Julio Rodriguez. The overall numbers are not great. And so if someone in your league doesn't realize how valuable he has been and is going to be, I would absolutely be trying to buy him. And even who was J.P. Crawford was out of the lineup a couple of days, and Julio Rodriguez was batting third for the Mariners over the weekend. So that's also a good sign. They've got faith in him. He's not going to hit third moving forward forever, but he's a potential superstar with a lot of value right now.
I don't know, Chris. He might just be batting third now because he has done it 4 games in a row.
3 of the past 4?
Four games in a row.
Oh, okay.
No, 3 of the past 4. You're right about that.
Yeah.
The fonts on my computer is so small. I'm also just losing my eyesight. So if you ever see me to the side, I have another monitor over here where I'm trying to see things, but the eyes are just kind of going on me right now. The risers for me, of course, Julio Rodriguez was one of them. Christian Yelich, Dalton Varsho. I moved
Varsho up to my number 4 catcher.
I think I moved him up to 3. I think I now have him ahead of Will Smith.
Unreasonable. Will Smith's been, yeah. I mean, him and JT Realmuto have actually both been pretty bad this season.
Oh, look at it, Scott. So aggressive. He's got Varsho.
I had forgotten. JT Realmuto has kind of been terrible for like a year straight now. He's got a 674 OPS right now. And let me pull it up. His last 365 days, he's hitting 251 with a 727 OPS, 15 homers, 13 steals in 129 games. That's not, for a catcher, that's not bad, but it's not special.
No, it's not. And I was just going to mention, Scott moved Varsho up to his second-ranked catcher ahead of JT Realmuto, only behind Salvador Perez. Let's see how long it takes for Scott to actually move Varsho ahead of Salvador Perez. I think it's going to take quite some time. Obviously,
I would think so,
he loved Perez coming into the season. Risers for me again, Yelich, Julio Rodriguez, Varsho, Rowdy Tellez, I moved inside my top, I think, 18 at first base. Josh Naylor, I moved up to my 59th ranked outfielder. So inside the top 60 there, if you play in 5 outfielder leagues. Tarek Skubal, I moved inside my top 60 starting pitchers. Nestor Cortez, I moved up to my 50th ranked starting pitcher. Chris, a few fallers for you. Shane Bieber, Marcus Semien, and Javier Baez. And like you, I dropped Bieber down to my SP14. So down a little bit.
Yeah, he's down to 16 for me, I'm pretty sure. And look, we are 17. I actually, after Robbie Ray's most recent start, I actually just put Robbie Ray ahead of him. And we've talked about the Shane Bieber thing quite a bit, but the velocity's way down. He's averaging below 90 miles per hour with his fastball. The spin rate way down, and that's something that we didn't really see last season because of the shoulder injury. We didn't see how the sticky stuff ban affected him. And I don't know. I think there's a chance Shane Bieber's just like an average to below average ERA guy who gets a decent number of innings and strikeouts, but the early returns are pretty not great for Shane Bieber so far.
Yeah, a few other fallers for me outside of Bieber. I've got Yuli Gurriel, Just kind of looking old right now. I don't know if he's gonna get back on track.
Gurriel in my list just because I was going off of players who are in my trade values chart, and I think he just fell out of the trade values chart, so I just didn't even see him on that list of fallers. So that's its own version of falling.
Mm-hmm. Jurickson Profar, I moved way down, and no surprise here, but Joey Gallo is now at number 60 in my outfield rank. So I will take Josh Naylor over Joey Gallo.
I still have Gallo in my top 40. Falling.
He's falling.
He is falling.
He's falling, Chris. Let's take a closer look at Jose Berríos. I mentioned facetiously at the top of the show that Jose Berríos might stink. Well, what's going on with him? Two rough outings in a row. His ERA is up to 5.82, and he gave up 5 hits, 5 runs over 5 1/3 innings at the Yankees. 8 more hard hit balls. Chris, he is getting crushed right now. His StatCast expected ERA entering Wednesday was 7.75. That is just, that's abysmal. And now his swinging strike rate is 8.4%. It's now sub 10% two straight seasons. I don't know. I dropped him a little bit. You know, more so, I moved pitchers ahead of him. I didn't just drop Berríos. It's just like other pitchers around him that are pitching better right now. But what do you think? Are you actually concerned over what's going on with him?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's been really easy so far to move guys ahead of Jose Berríos. And he, I think he was like 19 or 20 for me to start the season. And it's just been like every week, it's just like, yeah, I'll move Pablo Lopez ahead of him. I'll move Clayton Kershaw. And it's just like now he's all the way down to 29. And even that might be a little too high. I will say, I wonder if he's tipping his pitches. It because it's just so bad right now in a way that almost like beggars belief. Like he's a fastball velocity and spin rate and everything looks mostly like it usually does. And he's just getting crushed with every single pitch. I mean, his lowest exit velocity allowed on a pitch right now is his curveball, and that's 89 miles per hour. Last season, his highest exit velocity allowed in a pitch was 89.7 with his fastball. So Berríos has always been one of those guys who's been pretty good at limiting contact. And this season, he's just been absolutely abysmal. 49.5% hard hit rate before he gave up, 8 hard hit balls today. So it feels like Luis Castillo at this time last year, where there doesn't seem to be an obvious physical explanation for why he's struggling so much, to the point where I almost have to wonder, I almost have to think that there's just something mechanically wrong that he'll fix and be fine. So I'm not saying you should be panic selling Jose Berríos. Nah, I think he's probably a buy low.
Fair enough. How about these other two pitchers, Chris? What have you seen from these two? Logan Gilbert, 2 mixed starts in a row now. He allowed 4 runs on 3 hits, 3 walks on Wednesday over 5 innings. He had 9 strikeouts, which was a season high. But he has 3 or more walks in 4 straight starts. And he's just overall a weird pitcher. His swinging strike rate below 10%, not getting a lot of whiffs. He allows hard contact. He allows a lot of fly balls. The control has been lacking. But overall, the results have been there for Logan Gilbert. So what are you seeing with him?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I've noticed with Logan Gilbert and the thing that is most confounding based on what we typically understand about pitchers is his called plus swinging strike rate is pretty middling. In this start, it was 25%. I think it's been below 28% for the season. And that typically would make you think that a guy who has a really good ERA is going to suffer some regression. But today, this is illustrative of how the season has gone so far for Logan Gilbert. Today, he had 24 foul balls with his fastball. He's been running foul ball rates north of 20% for much of the season. And that is, I don't know if that's sustainable, I guess is the way I would put it. It's really hard to be a really good strikeout pitcher without like a good called plus swinging strike rate. I'm looking at a piece from Al Melchior, actually, from The Athletic. I think it was 2 days yesterday, actually. And there's a very strong correlation historically between strikeout rate and called plus swing and strike rate. And he's one of the outliers, Logan Gilbert. So it's a weird profile, and I don't know how sustainable it is.
It is weird, man.
Yeah.
I have trouble saying to sell high, Chris, just because the pedigree is there. And you watch him pitch, like, he has good stuff. But I've noticed it. He struggles with consistency on his secondary pitches. Yeah. It was something I noticed last year. You know, there's just starts where either his changeup isn't working or his slider isn't working or they're both not working. And then he has to be fastball heavy. And, you know, last year the results weren't great. He kind of ran bad. And this year so far, he's kind of running hot. So he is a weird one. I don't think I would sell high. I mean, unless someone's like really willing to overpay for him. But
yeah, I think it depends on, like, is someone viewing, I don't know where you and Scott have Logan Gilbert ranked, but he's 37 for me at starting pitcher. So I'm still a little iffy on him. So if someone's viewing him as like a top 24 starting pitcher, then yeah, I think there's a chance to sell him. And I think might be people who do view him as that because Logan Gilbert is a highly touted prospect. He had a lot of hype coming into the season, and you know, maybe someone does view him that way, in which case, I would sell high. But it's not a get out while the getting's good kind of situation, because I do think there's room for his swing and miss rates on his secondary pitches to improve. You know, right now his whiff rate on every pitch is below 25%, and that's pretty bad. Last year his slider and changeup were both about 38%. So if he can get back to that, then there's room for the strikeout rate to grow even more than what we've seen. So, you know, that's, I think I'm holding steady on Logan Gilbert as like an SP3, SP4.
All right. A few other pitchers I wanted to mention. Miles Michaelis lowers his ERA to 1.49. He allows just one run over seven innings at the Orioles. Lean into the slider in this one, 37%. And overall, he's throwing his slider more this season. He's got a 1.49 ERA, which I don't think is sustainable. But I will point out he's doing a great job limiting hard contact. And the ground ball rate has slowly been climbing throughout the year. So I think this is close to the breakout 2018 we saw from Michaelis. I also think that he's just healthy again. So, if you could sell high, of course, but I kind of like Michaelis, that awesome defense behind him, obviously a great division to pitch in as well. Jameson Taillon, two solid starts in a row, both against the Blue Jays. He allowed two runs over five and a third, and he has two starts next week. So if you want to beat the waiver wire, he's 72% rostered. He's got the White Sox, and he's at the Orioles. Started throwing a new cutter about three starts ago, and he's using it 25%+ in two straight starts. The results have been good for Taillon, so I kind of like what I've seen from him as well. Let's move over to some waiver wire hitters. Alejandro Kirk, we mentioned earlier, he went 2-for-4. He's batting .360 over his last seven games. He's 57% rostered if you need a catcher. Tommy Pham, 3-for-4 with a walk, two runs scored, two RBI. Chris, he's batting .315 over his last 15 games. I feel like I say it every day. I still think he's the most under-rostered hitter right now in CBS. He's 46% rostered. Problem is, he only has five road games next week.
Yeah, he was a big riser for me. I moved him into the top 50 at outfielder as well. And yeah, I think he's one of those guys where the expected stats suggest that he's like a stud, and I don't think he's going to be that for a lot of reasons. I mentioned last week he's someone who doesn't really pull the ball at all. He hits everything like sprayed or to the gaps, and it's just, you're not going to get as much out of each batted ball. You know, a 380 foot ball to left field is a home run every time. You know, that's Nolan Arenado's whole thing at this point in his career. She's hitting 380 foot home runs. But if you hit a 380 foot ball to left center, there's a decent chance it's going to be caught. You know, maybe not in Cincinnati every time, but you know, a lot of the time. So, I do think, like, if you look at the underlying numbers and you see, like, wow, Tommy Pham is a star, I don't think he's that. But yeah, he's clearly a must-start outfielder right now.
Chris, would you rather have Tommy Pham or Alec Thomas, the prospect for the Diamondbacks, who went 2-for-3 on Wednesday, hit his first career home run off of Sandy Alcantara? Alec Thomas is 49% rostered. He's got eight games next week. Would you rather have Pham or Thomas?
I would rather have Thomas. It is, you know, I will just not relevant to that question necessarily, but I will say that promising start from Sandy Alcantara. He looked really good.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of made the one mistake, I think. So that was good. And Alec Thomas, you know, made him pay for the one mistake. So I think I want both. I mean, I've got yeah. room for both Alec Thomas and Tommy Pham in most of my outfield. But if you did have to pick one for some reason, I would take the flyer on Alec Thomas having more upside. There's also just the fact that Tommy Pham's been awesome for two straight weeks, and he's still 46% rostered. So clearly people aren't buying it. So you've got a better chance of picking up Alec Thomas and maybe being able to pick up Tommy Pham tomorrow, you know, if you want to.
Fair enough. That is the right answer, by the way, Chris. I mean, we need offense. Pick up both of these guys, Tommy Pham yeah. and Alec Thomas. Which one of these first basemen would you rather have, Chris? I know you liked Luke Voit coming into the season. Finally gets on the board. Double dong on Wednesday. His first two home runs with the Padres. He's 56% rostered. Or would you rather have Juan Yepez, who went 2-for-5 with his second home run? He has now started all 7 games since being called up and has a hit, at least one hit in each of them. He is 41% rostered. Luke Voit or Juan Yepez? You are muted, sir.
It would be Voit for me. I am muted. I was. just because my expectations for Voit were so high coming in, and I think the, you know what, 2 walks in his first game back from the IL and then the 3-hit game with 2 home runs, that sounds to me like someone who's figured it out. And Luke Voit, when he's been healthy, has just, he's crushed the ball throughout his career. So I'm pretty confident he's going to crush the ball now. But, you know, Yepez has been pretty impressive so far. So might be a situation where maybe the answer is both. you should probably try to add both. Because, again, I've got plenty of leagues where I could use a corner infielder and potentially a first baseman. So, yeah.
Add all of them. Pham, Thomas, Luke Voit, Juan Yepez.
I mean, at this point, like, we had, there was a guy on Twitter who was, like, getting on Scott's case because he said Rowdy Tellez was a must add. And it's like, that's not to say that these guys are all going to be stars. Like, if someone's available in 50% of leagues on May 12th, they're probably, the most likely outcome is they're not good. Like, that just, like, okay, you have the random prospect or the guy who just gets overlooked, but, like, generally speaking, most of the guys you're adding on the waiver wire are not going to be good. But offense is at such a premium right now that these guys are showing the kind of potential that makes them, you know, potentially difference makers. And you can't pass that up mm-hmm. right now just because, like, you shouldn't drop a really good player for them, even if they're struggling. You shouldn't drop Whit Merrifield, you know, for any of these guys.
Right.
But you should be trying to get as many bites at the apple as you can with guys who are showing upside when offense is so hard to find.
In deeper leagues, if you need a middle infielder, Cesar Hernandez went 3-for-4 with 2 runs scored. His last 15 games, he's batting .344 with 10 runs, 2 stolen bases. He's 22% rostered. Just a name to watch, Brendan Donovan with the Cardinals. He went 2-for-2 with 2 walks, 2 doubles, 3 runs scored, 2 RBI on Wednesday. That's one day after hitting his first career home run, and he has started both games at shortstop. So you hit, I think you're going to play. Brendan Donovan, a name to watch. Sandy Alcantara, some leftovers here, Chris. I know you mentioned he got back on track. 7 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. Leaned all the way into the changeup in this one. Threw it a season-high 44%. And it has been his best pitch this season. So if that's what's going to work, let's do it. I'm all for it.
When you can throw a changeup 95 miles an hour, you know, it's kind of like you don't need a fastball every time if you can throw your changeup like that. Yeah, he looked awesome. And I think the changeup is his best pitch. I think it's been his best pitch since the start of last season. So I have no problem with him throwing it more.
Alex Cobb was solid again, 2 starts in a row, 5 1/3, 1 run, 6 strikeouts, but he's at Colorado next week, Chris, so yeah. You might want to get Cobb out of your lineups for that one.
Yeah, I mean, his ground ball rate is super high, so
it's crazy.
It's not out of the question that he could have a good start, but yeah, 1 start week at Colorado, generally speaking, you're sitting all but the best pitchers, so I'm okay with that.
All right, some hitting leftovers. Trevor Story off the schneid hits his first Red Sox home run on May 11th. Who would have thunk it? Bo Bichette went 3-for-5 with a double. He's batting .290 over his last 15 games. Hunter Renfro hit a double dong. He's now up to 8 homers. Rhys Hoskins went 2-for-5 with his 5th homer. It was his 3rd home run in as many days, so 3 straight days with a home run. Gene Segura went 1-for-2 with 2 walks and his 2nd steal, crushing it in May. He's batting .452, 3 homers, 1 steal. Gene Segura's average exit velocity in May is 96 miles per hour. So that is awesome. Eric Hosmer, he heard you, Chris. He heard you on yesterday's podcast, and he said, acknowledge me, 3-for-4 with his 4th home run. He is batting .367. Pete Alonso went 2-for-4 with his 8th home run. He's off to a great start in May. Juan Soto hit his 7th homer. He has 10 RBI. I think that might just be a problem for him this season. Nationals lineup, not very good. Nelson Cruz went 1-for-3 with his 4th homer. Corey Seager hit his 7th home run. He has 3 homers over the past 2 days. And Francisco Lindor, I'll always be transparent with you. Obviously, I was bragging. He's off to this MVP start, and he's gone ice cold in May. He's betting .146, the hard contact, the line drive rate.
It's fine. It's fine.
I need you.
I moved him up.
I have a lot of Lindor. I need it. I need him to.
Yeah,
to
I mean, look, the slump is not helping you right now, personally.
Of course.
But he's fine.
All right. Call to the bullpen. Some bullpen updates for the Pirates. David Bednar was perfect for the Pirates' final 2 innings, striking out 3 for his 5th save. And Bednar has the Pirates' last 4 saves overall. So kind of just think he's the guy, and he should be. For the Yankees, Aroldis Chapman gave up a walk, a hit, and a run, but picked up his 8th save. For the Phillies, Corey Knebel, final 4 outs for his 6th save of the season. For the Diamondbacks, Chris, I know you added Ian Kennedy in a few leagues last week.
Mm-hmm.
Might work out because Mark Melanson, he entered in a tie game. He gave up a walk, 3 hits, 4 runs. I think the Marlins had an 8-run 9th inning.
The Marlins were winning 3-1 heading into the bottom of the 8th.
I don't want to talk about this, Chris.
And the Diamondbacks scored twice. And then the Marlins won 11-3. That is wild.
I was so frustrated for the way that game went for multiple reasons because obviously, I have a lot of Sandy Alcantara shares. The guy just cannot buy a win. It's so frustrating. And I bet the under in the game. So it was 7.5 total runs. This game is cruising along.
Looked real good.
3-1 in the 8th inning. I'm like, yeah, I got this. Money in the bank. Next thing you know, 11-3. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is, it's tough. For the Cubs, David Robertson is on the COVID IL. Rowan Wick pitched the final 2 innings against the Padres for his 2nd save. And then for Tampa Bay, they've kind of been doing Tampa Bay things recently. Andrew Kittredge, he entered in the 8th inning with a 2-run lead to face the bottom of the lineup. He gave up 2 runs on 3 hits. He might have stayed in for a 2-inning save. I don't know. He's done that a few times already this year. But after that, Brooks Raley picked up the save in extra innings. It's his 3rd save of the season. Andrew Kittredge has 4. So Raley is actually someone I've picked up in a few deeper category leagues.
Yeah, it would have to be a deeper league. But
yeah, 15-team roto. I've picked up a few Brooks Raley shares. He's been getting some saves. To stream or not to stream, let's start with Thursday. Luis Gil at the White Sox. Taijuan Walker at the Nationals. James Caprillion at the Tigers. Josh Winder versus the Astros. Jordan Hicks versus the Orioles. And Tyler Anderson versus the Phillies.
I think Winder's probably the only guy I would trust in a standard 12-team league. But Anderson is okay in deeper formats.
Is that a revenge game for Tyler Anderson?
Think so. Did he pitch for the Phillies?
I don't know. No, he didn't. I thought he did for some reason. It's Kyle Gibson, Tyler Anderson, you know, one's righty, one's lefty.
They got a lot of guys like that.
But they're kind of the same guy, right? Right? Yeah. Anyway, Friday, we've got Mitch Keller versus the Reds. It feels like every start Mitch Keller has made has come against the Reds this year. It is uncanny.
Doesn't make you feel more confident about Mitch Keller's production so far?
No. Marco Gonzalez at the Mets, Aaron Civale at the Twins, Drew Smyly at the Diamondbacks, Zach Davies versus the Cubs.
That being said, Keller's probably the best of the options. I wouldn't want to start him, but
big yikes.
If I had to pick one, if you were forcing me to pick one,
don't do it.
I would go with Mitch Keller.
Oh. I would say none, but
yeah, that would be my preference.
Yeah, this is, I guess I would go with Keller too, but man, Friday, not great. Probably don't want to stream. We're going to wrap there. For Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
To the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount+.